serving up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been.
Now back to Cleveland Browns Daily with Nathan Zagura and Jim Donovan on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Did you hear that?
Wow, yeah.
Special open, right?
Special open, a name mention.
Yeah. That's right. Hello there. We are here, Nathan Zagura and Jim Donovan, as you heard, in for Matt Wilhelm, who is on the Buckeye Cruise. And speaking of cruises, Jim, I'm sure this has crossed your desk in the news world. What do you make of the Gronk Cruise now that we've heard the stories and we've seen the videos?
You know, I don't know. I nothing surprises me with him. Everything is big and wild. And he is a guy that, I remember after they lost that Super Bowl when he had the bad ankle, and he was still out partying moments after the game.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think that there is a fun button that he hits, and he hits it often.
He certainly does.
Or wherever.
It's interesting just the way that media coverage goes, and it's starting to become a story because people are drumming it up, but that if Rob Gronkowski were Cam Newton, how would people be reacting to the cruise?
Yeah.
What's the difference? Is it the fact that he's successful? What's the difference between him and, say, before we got into the stuff that involved females with Johnny Manziel, because his troubles were documented well before that,
right?
That became an aspect of it. What's the difference between Gronk and Johnny? Is it that he's successful?
Yeah, what not only that, but he is media friendly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he is media friendly. He is a darling locally back in Boston. He's not one of these guys that, you know, you can only deals with the national media. I think he deals with the Globe and he deals with the little paper, you know, the Quincy Patriot Ledger. You know, yeah. I mean, he does all. So he's an equal opportunity guy for all the media. So I think right then and there, that puts you in a different light.
Gets you a pass.
He's never in a bad mood.
No.
He's never in a bad mood. He's
How could you be? He's Gronk.
He can be racked in pain, and he still finds a smile to put on his face. I think that's one of the things, though. I think, you know, there are times, I think the Cam Newton thing, there are some times when he's in a bad mood.
Sure.
I don't think this guy's ever in a bad mood.
No, yeah. I like him. I want to go on that cruise.
I remember the night I was in Music City Hall the night he got drafted,
okay,
which was the second night of the draft. He didn't go on the first night.
Yeah.
So he comes into the media room. They had a media room underneath behind the stage where if you just got picked, you came in and you met with the national media.
It's a teeny little like call kind of, right?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, only the Rockettes can fit in there. I mean, and not the big media members that are in there. And he came in with his brothers and his dad, and there were NFL helmets on the table as ornaments. And they grabbed the helmets, tried to put them on, and started blocking each other and getting into three-point stances. I mean, it was amazing. And I didn't know the legend of Gronk at that time, but it was growing quickly.
It's amazing. And seeing the videos, his dad was there, obviously, partying with his shirt off. A guy who's in fantastic shape.
Well, that's all they do.
C&G
Don't
Fitness,
they just work out all the time?
Yeah. That is what they do. Yeah. And you know, the best part of all the Gronk stories, it obviously sounds like a fun trip. And, you know, I know someone who's good friends with Stephen Ridley, who was on the trip, and said it was the most fun he's ever had. And one of my buddies who's a wrestler, his tag team partner, actually from the WWE, was on the trip because he played at college with Gronk and his friends with him. And they said it was great. But they didn't even rent out the whole boat. So half of the boat was a lot of elderly people on their nice vacation.
Bingo, and playing
just,
bingo,
and
right?
They just walked right into the Gronk Cruise.
Wow. Well, there you go. I mean, I think that's the way he is. I think he's a big, fun-loving guy.
I mean, they got to get their own ship next year. Gibbs, when you see this, what were your thoughts?
Nothing surprised me at all.
It just seemed awesome.
Yeah.
No,
Jason, don't you think that his whole aura is that he is a tough guy to dislike? And I have
to
tell you, Jason, when we were in Foxborough a couple of years ago and the Browns suffered that terrible loss, and remember, he got injured badly in that game, I felt terrible for the guy because he's kind of a likable guy. He's a great talent, but he's a likable guy.
He doesn't so talk bad about people. No. You don't hear him slamming people. He just likes to get along and likes to have fun.
Yeah.
He's living his dream the way we all should live our dreams.
What was it that John Stewart, when he introduced Bruce Springsteen on a big night here in Cleveland with Springsteen at the Q tonight, at the Kennedy Center Honors when Springsteen was honored that night, he said the thing about Bruce Springsteen, every night, he empties the tank. That's what Gronk does. He empties the tank.
God bless him for living life the way that
right,
he does.
Yeah.
And still being able to stay out of trouble and focus and be arguably, I mean, if he keeps going like this for a few more years, I don't think there's a question he's the greatest tight end to ever play the game. He is the most dominant, certainly.
Well, he's changed the game, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, just worry about the durability.
Well, yeah.
What happened in that game against the Browns? And
what happened in the game against the Broncos this year, the night they suffered their first loss? Everybody thought that was going to be.
It was done.
Yeah, it looked like it was over. I mean, everyone said, oh, my goodness, he was, you know, it looked like what happened, in that game against the Browns when he got hurt.
Absolutely, and I wish we could have a little Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah,
well,
I like our guy, but Rob Gronkowski's on a, you know, I mean, I love our guy.
You gotta love big
guy. I love our guy.
They couldn't be more opposite.
I didn't know the guy took everybody to the movies all year long.
He takes everybody to the movies.
I'd love to go to the movies with him.
He gives his shoes away. He brings American
football.
He's a great guy. Doesn't drink. He is literally the antithesis of Gronk at the tight end position.
Yeah.
Yes,
he should be in the movie Hoosiers if they ever remake it.
He could be Jimmy Chitlin, absolutely. All right, our Ohio Business Machine hot topics of the day: how much should a combine workout factor into the evaluations by the Browns? Is it a bigger deal than their pro day? Or here's an even better question, which I'll add in: do they matter? Do they matter that much? Do you want to base everything on the combine, or what percentage of the overall evaluation should it be? Give us your top three options right now for the Browns at number two. And if you could ask the players at the combine a question, what's the one question you would want to ask them? That's an interesting one.
Yeah, that is an interesting one.
What would you want to ask them?
I think that I would just like to ask them, how important is winning, you know, as a team to you? Not winning as an individual, not winning off the field in endorsement possibility and riches that way. But, I mean, I look at some of the guys that are on these two teams, and on really, if you go through the Final Four that made it, you know, to the conference championship games, and then beyond that, there were a lot of guys on that team, on those teams, I think, that really were just winners, to be winners, to be on that field and to win as a team. Not just the quarterbacks now.
Sure.
But I'm talking about, you know, that kid Keekley. I mean, he is a great player from Boston College who really epitomizes winning as a team, winning as a unit.
Yeah.
You know, those are the kind of things, because I think when all of a sudden you see these guys that, you know, take a look at it and it has so many more possibilities because it's such a big stage in the NFL, they get distracted, and distraction leads to low performance, I think.
Yeah, you slip.
Yeah, I really do.
The things
I mean, the other
great
thing is, I mean, the visual, I don't know about the drills and what they mean, Nathan, but the other thing is a guy going to be physically in shape to play? This really is a 12-month-a-year occupation now. I mean, you can go on the cruise with Gronk, but you got to come back and at some point hit the restart button and get going. I mean, you cannot have guys out of shape. You just lose time.
And the funny thing is, and he just said, Gronk, he came back, said, I'm going to sleep now for a couple days.
Here you go.
And then I'm getting back to
work. He's going to go to work.
And
he will go
to
work. Yeah.
And it is also interesting, talk about, you know, staying in shape, et cetera. And Jameis Winston is just coming today.
Yeah, I read that, yeah.
I want to get in better shape. The most important thing I've learned is I have to get my body in shape, because those men look good. Not just the order quarterbacks, but everybody at the Pro Bowl, they look good. You see the shape that they're in, and
now,
that's going to help you.
Wasn't there a point last year where Winston had looked like he really had gotten heavy?
Yeah, he looked doughy.
Yeah, he did. He looked really kind of flubby and flabby, and then he really had to get himself in shape. So I think what he said also was he learned at the Pro Bowl, right?
That that's what
I'm
saying.
Really
seeing everybody
has to get going.
That the top guys in the league always, they look.
Yeah, they do. I mean,
like
they really
professional
do.
Professional athletes, and he didn't quite look that way. So it is funny. So for me, I'm going to cheat.
Yeah, what
I'll
would
go
you
two.
Say? Yeah.
One, I want to know do you love winning more than you hate losing?
Right.
Because I think it's and there are people that hate losing and that drives them to win. There are people that just love winning and will do whatever it takes. But I think the people that hate losing that would answer that way have that fear of failure. which can be a powerful motivator, but it's also there, which can start to lead into doubt when things don't go your way, and you're like, oh no, here it goes. Mm-hmm. Whereas people to me who are just focused on the positive and winning are just solely locked in
right.
on the goal and locked in on the outcome. It's like when they say when you drive, you know, when you're they teach you to drive race cars, where your eyes go, that's where the car is going to go. And so right. I think as long as you're focused on the prize, I think that's important. And the other one I would ask, especially for guys that are at big schools, If we asked your teammates and coaches to describe you in one word, what do you think the top three answers would be?
Mm-hmm. That would be a very interesting question to ask Connor Cook.
And that was the perfect right. example, because the best part about it is you can actually go and ask these questions yeah. and get these answers.
Right.
So that would be interesting to see, number one, how the person views themselves, how they their self-awareness of how their teammates and coaches view them, and are these positive traits or are they negative traits? I think you could learn a lot from that.
So I look at guys that we have right now, and in that formula that you're talking about, which is, you're right about that. That's an important part of the whole thing. And I look at a guy like Danny Shelton. And I think winning means an awful lot to him. I don't think he liked the taste of 4:30 most Sunday afternoons
yeah.
this past year. So I like that. I know he didn't like the feeling, but I like that he didn't like the feeling.
Absolutely. Okay?
I think a kid, now another kid that if you go back in his past, the kid Kirksey seemed to be the kind of kid that, I mean, his teammates loved him. He was a captain, wasn't he, for a number of years.
Won all their awards.
And that's the kind of guy that, you know, and the other thing is I think Kirksey is a guy that really wants to get better all the time.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about Nate Orchard yesterday. I mean, you know, Nate Orchard comes at it from a different angle. You know, he's like a kid like Desir. I mean, these guys have families. And this is, you know, they're not coming in footloose and single free. I mean, they're coming in and they're supporting their family.
Yeah, he's not going on the Gronk cruise.
No, yeah. Well, no.
No. But I think there's a good point. And clearly what you saw last year, if nothing else, was – they tried to draft guys that fit what they thought, and from a personality, maturity
yeah.
standpoint, Ibrahim Campbell from Northwestern,
right.
they tried to draft a certain type of guy. And I think in the NFL, at the end of the day, you need a blend of those kind of guys, and you need some real MFers, some just nasty, mean, just we are going to impose our will, physical monsters as well. And I think when you bring that all together, that's when you have success, because you look at the good teams and they have tone setters. I mean, you look at the Super Bowl champions right now. Von Miller's certainly not a bad boy, but he's had his issues
yes,
in the past.
Has. Yes, he has.
He's a tone
setter. Aqib Talib. Yeah.
But tone setters. T.J. Ward, who was a Brown,
absolutely.
Is a tone setter.
Absolutely.
And you need that kind of mix of the good guys who are focused on all the right things along with those tone setters, I think especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I agree with you about that. That's true. They definitely have those kind of players that, you know, and they win with those kind of players. I think, you know, on the extreme part of that, a guy like Vontaze Burfict of the Bengals, and he comes to light today because he has come out and told somebody that he has to change his game a little bit,
yeah.
okay, and tone it down a little bit. But when he was still within the framework of the rules of the game, he was a definite game changer, trendsetter, you know, attitude guy, and that's the way the Bengals played differently when he did play that way.
No question. I mean, and the Bengals, I think, are an example of the team that gets the most out of those type of guys. You know, Pac-Man Jones had his issues for a while.
A lot of them.
They took a shot on Burfict, and they should have won that game. Jeremy Hill fumbles, and then
Maluga had his issues.
Yeah, but they got the best. And I think you need kind of the blend of that with
right.
the good guys. And I look at our offensive line, and sometimes people say, you know, our offensive line is great. And you look at Joe and Alex Mack, and you look at Mitchell Schwartz. They're very good, but you also need with that, you need that attitude, mm-hmm. that imposing of the will, that dominance. And a guy, if you watch on tape last year, the guy who might have been the best guard in the National Football League was a guy that had serious problems everywhere, but is nasty, and that's Richie Incognito. He had one of the best seasons of anybody in the league, and obviously he learned from what happened in Miami and channeled it into a constructive way, but it's such an interesting game because you don't want to go too far off the deep end with these guys that you can't rely on because they are too much of a wild card, but you need some of that attitude and that swagger and that the guys will impose their will and be physical to be successful in this game.
So was the greatness, or as we forecast, there was supposed to be a great offensive line. Do you think that, and I think Doug has mentioned this to me, that we are a little bit more of a finesse offensive line.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Then as you said yesterday, the Browns made a change last year and wanted to become a power road grading offensive line, and it maybe just did not fit the tempo or the personality or the that they really have. Yeah,
I don't think it fits the personnel. And I thought that's why Austin Pastor was the big mound of man and had it seemed like he had a little bit of that nastiness in him, and he helped that out. But it is interesting. Our offensive line, I truly believe, I've told people this all the time, our offensive line as it is current, and then we don't know what it's going to look like going the next season, but was built to be Kurt Warner's offensive line on The Greatest Show on Turf. Could be good pass protectors for a very good quarterback.
Yep.
Finesse, you space them out. You have Marshall Faulk running through those holes when you space teams out. But they're not. We're not the kind of team that was going to line up and say, you know we're going to run, we know we're going to run, and then run the ball down their throats.
And thus, I think that's why on very, very easy thinking downs and distance, third and one, we struggled.
Yeah,
there were times where we struggled. Third and three became a passing down, never even really thinking that you could get that, you know, down there. The goal line became a problem for them.
And when we'd go in, you remember, we'd use Cam Irving as the tight end,
jumbo. Yeah.
And that just it didn't work. We weren't able to line up and do that. So one thing that will be interesting is if this team does address the line position, and maybe Mitchell Schwartz isn't back, maybe Alex Mack's not back. We know we both want them back, but if that doesn't work out, it is a business. It will be interesting to see if they go for more, knowing that Hugh Jackson likes that power game, if they go for more maulers than finesse-type blockers on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, you look at the Bengal offensive line, and, you know, that's the most recent thing that you look at, and Hugh had a lot of success down there with that offensive line, and I would agree with you. That was a power from Whitworth to Smith once they got him going, you know, to the Bodine in the middle in there, and the people like that, you're right. I mean, that offensive line had a great deal of attitude.
Yeah.
And you know, nastiness.
You need a little nasty.
You do.
You need some good guys. You need a little nasty here in the National Football League if we're going to chase greatness, as Hugh Jackson says. And obviously the combine, the first opportunity to look at that. And you get a sense, I think, in these interviews, if these guys are nasty, if they're relentless, if they're going to pursue victory and winning like you want the Browns to do. And I think Connor Cook, if he gets asked that question, has to list the three things that he thinks people say about him. It'll be interesting to see if he's honest, because when you're that guy and you're not the captain, there's some splaining to do, as they like to say, which will be interesting. 216-578-0850. Again, let us know what you would ask the players at the combine. We'll ask Gibbs as well. Call us up, 216-578-0850. Zagura and Donovan on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Jim Donovan, Jason Gibbs with you here on a Tuesday before we head on the road to the draft to Indianapolis for the combine. And we are going to go ahead and go to the phones. Now we've got Heath in Indiana with us. Heath, welcome.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent.
So I have a question. I've been reading about how the Browns want to do what the Raiders did with Carr and Khalil Mack in the draft. And since they have a second and a 31st pick, I'm wondering if they're going to do something like that. And if so, what would be the better pick between Goff and Wentz?
Okay, so boy, that was a good draft, wasn't it?
They did a very good job
changed
on that one.
That changed the Raiders' perception and play. And we've seen that now the last couple of years, because we've seen them once these guys came, and you could tell, especially with Mack. Joe Thomas said that Khalil Mack is going to be
the
best he ever won against.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what they're doing at 32. At 32, you can I think at 2, I think you go and try and get the quarterback of the future here.
I agree.
Okay. At 32, you can do, I mean, there are a lot of needs across the board here. I mean, you know, do they need a pass rusher? Yes, they need a pass rusher. You know, do they need a receiver? You know, there are some things up in the air right now. I mean, what's going on with Gordon? When does he get the thumbs up or the thumbs down? And hopefully it's thumbs up that he comes back here, because that changes the roster immediately.
Absolutely.
Okay, but, you know, I think a lot of people would like to see more targets here if you're going to throw the ball. But again, now there'll be free agency before that. But I think maybe a pass rusher. You know, I think you got to have some help. You got to get to the quarterback, and you got to have the quarterback.
The way that I look at it, and to answer your question, Goff or Wentz, for me, it's Goff. I like his footwork. I like the way that he processes information. He can read the whole field. I think he's the best natural thrower of the ball in the draft. He's going to get bigger. He's still 6'4", so he actually has the size. This isn't a small guy, 6'4", 215. I've heard he's going to go to the combine and have shown that he's put on some weight there, muscle. Mm-hmm. But I think that he does the things that I think allow you to win and win consistently in the NFL. I talk to Wilhelm about it all the time. Would you rather face a guy that could beat you with his mind and deliver the football accurately, or one a guy that could throw the ball through
the roof?
Euclid. As a defensive player, they were much more concerned with the guy that could figure out what they were doing pre-snap, post-snap, and beat it, because with every defense, there's something that can beat it.
So what do you think about the other wave? I mean, I'm with you on Goff, too. I don't want to duck the guy's question. I don't know. And I don't know enough about the other kid. I mean, I know he's getting raves. He seems to be the flavor of the draft now, because he's got a lot of the draft gurus really mesmerized by what he's been able to do and what he's done. And I guess he's a very likable kid, too.
Yes.
I mean, okay. So it's a great story, and it's Joe Flacco coming out of Delaware and this kid coming out of North Dakota State. But there's another wave of quarterbacks that are still out there. You mentioned a good guy as we were coming back, you know, off of the break, and that is Dak Prescott from Mississippi State. He's played a lot. He's won a lot.
Yeah.
He's not exactly a totally spread quarterback down there, right? I mean, he's done a lot of things down there.
Yeah, good thrower of the football, good leader. He came off very well down at the Senior Bowl.
Kid, Nathan, that gambled a little bit and stayed at Mississippi State.
Yeah, with worse talent around him.
Yes.
From that group, I'm not big on Connor Cook. I'm not big on Christian Hackenberg. I think Hackenberg's best bet is to end up back in Houston with Bill O'Brien and see if they can put that magic together. But from that middle group, you've got Dak Prescott, Cardale Jones, Kevin Hogan, a guy that a lot of people like, that, you know, Sudfeld from Indiana, people give some look to. Some people think Vernon Adams is a good quarterback and a good athlete and maybe has an opportunity. I don't like him as much given the size and coming from that offense. But Hogan gets a lot of attention. Cardale obviously gets attention. The kid from North Carolina State, Jacoby Brissett, gets certainly some attention. So there are quite a few of the guys in this class in those middle rounds that'll get looks. And again, I've said it from day one, and I'll say it again. I'm not against the Browns taking Goff at 2 and then coming back and getting a guy like Hogan. And as we said, with Pep with Pep having recruited, you know, Goff, and obviously recruiting Hogan he has to know him well. And there'd be some natural familiarity there. So I would.
Let me just say this. I mean, obviously coming out of that offense is terrific.
Yep.
Okay. You're really, now, whether or not your physical abilities have you NFL ready is to be determined. But the mental abilities of playing for David Shaw and what Harbaugh had before that and with Pep Hamilton there, I mean, it really has you thinking the way an NFL quarterback should. Yeah,
absolutely.
And I don't think you're starting at square one with a kid coming out of that offense from Stanford. Here's the other thing about Hogan. A real leader, I mean, you know, really guts a game out. Has bad games. I mean, he can put some, not many, but there have been some games where he hasn't been terrific.
Yes.
But then he'll always come back the next game. And I think that I heard David Shaw one time said that they really had to tell him to have a little bit more fun with the game, because he burned himself to the point where he was exhausted mentally trying to overcome everything. And just go out and let it happen. And then he became a better quarterback at times. The other thing was he suffered a personal tragedy. His dad passed away, and he lost his dad, who was very, very close to him.
Yes.
And that kind of really was a speed bump, a big one, that he had to overcome, and he did. But he wins a lot.
He's a way you
yeah,
pointed that out.
He wins a lot.
34-10 as a starter, which is the most wins of any Stanford quarterback, the most victories of any active quarterback in the country. 14-6 against top 25 opponents in his career. He's also a better athlete than people realize.
Yeah.
Ran for over 1,000
yards.
Yeah,
he can run. That's right.
He's got a very good arm. He's not the most accurate, and I think that there's a lot of work that could be done with his delivery.
Yeah, his delivery's a little funky, isn't it? There's
it
a
is.
Hitch there
it's
or something?
It's hitched, and it's long.
Yeah.
But he's the kind of guy that mentally, I think, would understand and embrace that this would be Jared Goff's team, that he would come in to learn from McCown, compete with Austin Davis, and I think is the kind of guy that could develop into a very good backup quarterback for you and be a part of your program.
So has it been done before? Yeah, it was done. It wasn't done too far, too distant past, and that was the Redskins did it when they took RG3 and then took Kirk Cousins, and look at where they are.
They're about the franchise, Kirk Cousins, and they actually just said again, reiterated today that RG3's time is over.
Yeah.
In Washington.
But, I mean, and we were the start of that. I mean, we, you know, remember Cousins came in here and played and beat the Browns when RG3 was hurt the year they went to the playoffs, but they needed a week or two to get RG3 up and running again because he had injured that knee. And Cousins played amazingly well with Kyle Shanahan mentoring him that week to get him ready. Yeah. Just all game long, Nathan, bootleg, roll out, throw to the tight end. Bootleg, roll out, throw to the tight end. The whole game.
Yeah, 280 on that day and a couple touchdowns.
Yeah,
very efficient. But I think when you look at the Browns, McCown, you know, and we love him. We love him as a guy.
Yeah.
You can't count on him to start 16 games for you. He is a guy that will, you know, this could be his last year. Maybe he's got one more. So you would have with a guy like Hogan an opportunity to bring him along as that second quarterback to get ready to be your backup. And I think he would understand that that is why he was here. And who knows, if he ends up being the best, he ends up being the best. But I think that he would be a guy that naturally would be a good fit here as that second quarterback if the Browns did go that two-quarterback route.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see them do that. The old Packer GM, Ron Wolf, loved collecting quarterbacks. He always felt that you draft one every year, no matter what your needs
were. Why not?
Yeah, you always went out and got one. I mean, if you remember, and it sometimes if you have a wealth of them, it allows you to do other things. Mark Brunell, you know, I mean, and other guys. I mean, that, you know, Hasselbeck, you know, it allowed them to do some other things when they would go on and finally get another quarterback. So he was a believer you always needed to go get one every year.
I'm a believer in it, and I'm a believer if you're in the sixth round and you think a guy like Brett Hundley has unbelievable upside, you draft him over a fullback because he has an opportunity to transform your franchise.
That's right.
And a fullback does not. Mike Mayock, by the way, talking on his conference call right now, and he says that Jared Goff is more polished and ready, and Carson Wentz has a more significant upside. And when I'm the Browns, I'm looking – we've been so long looking for that quarterback. I'll take the guy that we know is going to be good, has a lower floor – or a higher floor. Maybe he doesn't have the ultimate ceiling, but you can win in the NFL as long as your quarterback's top half of the league. And if you are pretty certain of that, Wentz, I think, may have more potential. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's maybe a little bit more athletic. Mm-hmm. But potential doesn't buy you a whole lot.
That's
it gives
right.
you an opportunity, but it doesn't produce for you until it's potential that is realized. So it'll see what happens with those quarterbacks. When we come back, we're actually going to be joined by Gerard Cherry. He's going to hop on with us, talk about his combine experience, what he thinks of the combine, the do's and don'ts for guys participating, and much, much more. Gerard Cherry up next here with Jim Donovan and myself, Nathan Zagura, on Cleveland Browns Daily.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Jim Donovan. We go to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline and bring in from the really big show the one and only Gerard Cherry. Gerard, how are you?
What's up, gentlemen? How you doing today?
We are good. Good to talk to you.
We are good. Before we get into the combine, I asked Jim and Gibbs about it at the beginning of the show. I want to get your take, and I'm sure you've probably shared it already on the really big show, but I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the Gronk cruise and how that would have been responded to in your days with the Patriots.
Well,
would you have been on it?
Would you have been on it? I'm being honest. We got down and just we kept it very quiet and on the low key. Gronk has his own persona thing going, and I'm fascinated that Bill has not told him to settle it down some, but I guess at the same time, if Bill figures that, hey, this guy plays and performs and still is able to pull off his antics, then leave him alone. Because certain guys Bill don't mess with, and obviously Gronk is one of those guys, but man, the dude is off the chain. The deals that I saw, I'm saying, is that even allowed, legal in 50 states?
Do you think there are guys on the team that would be hesitant to go that don't perform at the Gronk level just to be, you know, worried about the wrath of Bill that he's not going to go after Gronk, obviously, but hey, I haven't necessarily been Gronk level as very few are, so I don't need to be, you know, acting crazy as Gronk did on that party boast.
Well, if you're a guy who's on the bubble and there's some questions about your character, you definitely don't want to go to that boat and get on that ship, because if you do, chances are you may be selling to another team or out of the NFL. So that definitely would come into play. At the same time, though, you could always use the excuse of, hey, I'm just building team camaraderie, Bill.
That's right, and you want that.
Hey, Gerard, just to tap into the Patriots' mindset a little bit more on that, and that is – having been there and now watching them lose like the way they did in that AFC championship game against Denver, which I was really surprised at. I really thought they were rolling to the point that they were going to win that game, even as the game unfolded. But how long of a bad hangover taste does that have inside that locker room? You know, from the time that they left the Mile High City, how does that feel back there? How do they take that?
Oh, they take it as the agony of defeat, in that it'll fuel them for the entirety of next season, in that they did not get the gold, they did not make it to the championship, they lost to Peyton Manning, to the Denver Broncos, and that's one team, even when I was playing there, that we struggled against. One of the few teams I could say that never lost, never beat, beat Denver and Green Bay. So I'm pretty sure that they're stewing on that. And from what I know about Tom, I know he's upset about that. And that's one of the things there, in that you appreciate wins, but I can tell you situations, guys, where we won games and it was as if we lost because it wasn't to the standard that guys had developed there and desired. So, yeah, that will last the entire season unless there's a Super Bowl victory come 2017.
Yeah, so see, Nathan, that's the thing I think you know, at the top of the show where you were talking about, what would you ask these kids at this combine?
Yeah.
And that bad taste, how long does it linger, and how are you going to use it in a positive way as a motivation? You want that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading the great book about Larry Bird and Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
After, I think it was when Magic beat Bird the first time,
right.
Bird immediately started working out
in French lick.
Yeah, like just immediately the bad taste was there. Gerard, I want to ask you about the combine and something that actually Bill Belichick said recently about it, that he said he thinks that with the way the specialized training for these players and these rookie prospects, the specialized training for the combine, working on their get-offs for the 40-yard dash, et cetera, that they actually take a multi-month hiatus from training on how to be good football players, and he thinks it's retarding the development of some of the young players when they come into the league. What do you think about that?
That's fair, because rare do you get in a 40-yard stance, and I've never done a situation in a game where I was doing the shuttles or broad jumping for
right.
God knows how many feet. Yeah, those things are not going to play. And the bench press, some people say, where do you utilize that? But I do think that's a good test of strength, and you need to test agility and speed. So there has to be some way of qualifying and quantifying where guys stand physically. So I think you need some elements of it. But again, because of the nature of the sport, you can't go out there and have an all-star scrimmage. You
got to
do
right.
something. And I do think, too, on some level, it shows you where a guy is professionally. What I think Bill's probably more upset about is that they're not getting enough information because their draft record has not been that great.
Yep.
And there are a lot of ways that you could be spectacular during the combine, but you're not really a good football player.
Right.
So there's credence to what he's saying as well. But I do think your level of professionalism, your level of preparation, those things can be garnered and observed from how you prepare for a combine. But, yeah, we are to a point now where, because of the shortness of training camp and OTAs and things of that nature, it's hard to tell who are the tough guys as opposed to a guy who may just be physically talented, which, again, does not yield him to be a good football player.
All right, just to establish this, you did go to the combine, didn't you, when you –
Yes, I did.
Okay. Now, how did you feel you did at the combine, and when you walked away from Indianapolis, how did you have a feeling about you, where you stood with all of these NFL teams?
I did god awful at the combine.
Oh.
Yeah, I did awful. And the
did you have specialized
awful,
training back then? Did you go to like an Exos?
Yeah, I went to a guy. His name was Raymond Ferris. I believe I'm getting his last name correct. He trained Jerry Rice. It wasn't his fault because he had other guys we trained with, the exception. Well, my problem was I was on the I'm going to go to the Super Bowl week prior and get my party on and not focus, come back and do the same thing, because I just assume, hey, I'm a track star at Cal. I just walk out and I'll do a 4.3 40.
Yeah.
And that was not the case. So the night prior, I had a roommate who snored his butt off. I got no sleep, so no training, no sleep. Run a 40. Good luck with that. And so I ended up running a slow time for me, which was like a 4.56. I should have been at least upper 4.3s, low 4.4s. And so it was used against me in that I ended up going late. Well, I guess 40th pick overall is not late second round. But I was pretty much being told I was going to be a first round draft pick.
Mm.
But that was a situation where the combine hurt my cause.
See, that's the story behind the story. So a guy snored all night long.
That's right.
And really, you did not get the proper rest, and it wasn't the total reason why you ran 4-5, but it was a contributing factor.
It was like Kyrie and the bed bugs.
It's like Kyrie Irving and the bed bugs.
You got to look into this. Yeah.
You guys are laughing, but that probably cost me anywhere from $5 to $10 million.
did you have a pro day that you got to run at after?
Yeah, but you know what? Because of the stage,
yeah.
And I didn't run where I was supposed to run pro day, but once you typecast or something, again, teams are not looking for reasons. They're looking for reasons and reasons not to pay you a lot of money.
Mm. Yep.
Let's just be frank about the situation. And I gave them a reason not to pay me a lot of money.
Do you remember when you went through the interview process, what you thought was the most interesting question or the one that maybe offered the best insight into you and what type of football player and commitment level you might have?
Yeah, it was, I'd say when people were asking me about my academic prowess and what was up with that, because some teams appreciated it and some teams felt that it was a detriment in that I don't want a smart football player, a guy that's academically sound. I don't want that guy because then you question your toughness because a smart guy can be tough as well. So those type of things came to play. Some teams loved it and thought it was a good deal to have a guy that took his academics serious as well. So that really had me thinking too, like, man, on one hand, it's good to be serious about your academics. But on the other hand, there's still this, for lack of a better word, stereotype or prejudice of being smart.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I mean, that's an interesting way to look at that because everybody, it seems as though, you know, the times change and trends come into the NFL and they come and they go. And you would think that everybody likes the thinking man's football player now,
right?
And that you would think you would like it always.
It's a mental
But
game.
I understand what he's saying there.
Yeah.
You know? I want to ask you a question. People have been writing about Tashaun Gibson now and how he does not feel optimistic about coming back here to the Browns this year. Next year, what did you think of him? Where do you think he is in his career? And this whole last year was just a lost year for him.
It totally was a lost year for him. But I even though I was a second-round draft pick, I get the free agent player mindset.
Right. So
pretty much towards the end of my career, I basically became a journeyman free agent guy who had to prove his merits and wasn't guaranteed anything. So I think what for him is like, when can I get the love? When can I get my just due? And obviously Ray and Pitt, though they made him a starter, they weren't trying to give him a new contract coming off a Pro Bowl year. Now you can say, granted, he was coming off injury, but I think for Tashaun, it's more so like, when you guys going to tell me I matter? When are you guys going to tell me that I'm worth something to you and that you appreciate my talents and what I've been able to overcome and achieve? Because I got to give it to him. When you're an undrafted guy, and you go to a team, and you do it, make the team, first of all, and then make it to a Pro Bowl, that should garner some applause.
Yeah,
but that has not been the case for him. He's not getting any type of fanfare, and I think he's bothered by that. And at the same time, he may just be playing a game of, let me see if they really do have concern for me and see me as far in the future and value me.
Yeah.
I would think that Ray Horton played a huge part in his maturation and being the success that he has.
So do you think that minus the high ankle sprain, and didn't he have a concussion then at some point later in the year? But the first thing was the high ankle sprain during the season. Minus that, do you think that what you're saying, that mindset of, hey, when are you going to show me some love and translate that into money, do you think that bothered him anyway coming into last season? Because I thought it bothered him from the time he showed up to the mandatory minicamp.
Exactly, from the get-go. He was in a bad state,
mood. Yeah,
you could totally tell, and it hampered his ability and his love for the game. You could see all those things unfold. You're looking at a guy who put the pressure on him, I have to do this, I have to do that so I can go get my money. And when you have that mentality, trust me, I know, you end up playing tight. And when you play tight, you're not right. So, yeah, I agree with you, Jim, wholeheartedly, that from the get-go, his mentality was, you know what, I got to prove these guys wrong. At the same time,
that's right,
he ended up proving them right. The doubts that they had, he ended up showing them.
And that's the tough part about it, right? Because from the Browns standpoint, you said, look, we can put you on this tender. Show you did it 1 year, but you got hurt in that year. Right. Show it to us one more time. And it's kind of the opposite situation of where a guy like Joe Flacco is like, I'm going to bet on myself. And,
right.
and he has that same pressure,
right.
but he bet on himself and won. And in the situation for Tashaun Gibson, you know, I think when you look at it from the Browns standpoint, and you know this as well, Gerard, the way that a team values a player and the way that the player values himself are not always close. And when they're not, it becomes impossible to actually get a deal done, even if both sides in the ideal world would want to get that deal done.
Yeah, they could be complete separate entities, totally different extremes, polar opposites, however you want to label it. And also, to this point of what we're talking about, guys, I think also him being on the Browns and seeing guys run through there and still get paid. And I'm not taking a shot at Dwayne Bowe, but obviously he got paid, and he
sure.
didn't have the greatest of years coming being signed.
Never
he
got
saw
a chance,
other guys,
but yes.
And he saw other guys as well that were under contract, and the team wasn't winning, and saying, you're going to pay these guys, but you're not going to pay me?
Yep.
So that jealousy factor kicks in, or envy kicks in as well, of why come they're paying this guy? He didn't do what I've done. He hasn't been here. All those things factor into a horrible year for Tashaun Gibson.
Yeah, well, now Nathan, yeah, and where does that horrible year, I mean, when he takes that out to the open market, as Gerard mentions, I mean, we saw it, everybody sees it, and they're going to do a lot of background on it when they're going to commit to somebody. I mean, where does that take him? How does he explain this last year?
I think it'll be difficult for him. I think he's going to have to answer the questions about his durability because he's missed games even in his good season.
Yeah,
he ended up getting hurt against
Atlanta right.
and didn't finish that season in his Pro Bowl season. He missed some time last year. You know, you look at it, Eric Weddle is on the market. George Aloka's on the market. Reggie Nelson's on the market. So I think there are some safeties that are ahead of him on the pecking order that are out there. I think it will be interesting. He's obviously a good athlete. I think he obviously – and the other part of it, when you go back and watch his tape and you watch his interceptions, most of them kind of came playing center field. The quarterback was hit. The ball floated up. He got him, at least in the big year. I mean, mm-hmm. there are at least three
right.
that way. Last year he makes the interception against the Jets early and then gives it right back, and that was kind of it for him as a playmaker during the season. Gerard, when you look at this Brown safety position, just to talk about Gibson further, I thought the guy that took advantage of Gibson's injuries and his opportunities was Jordan Poyer. And Jordan Poyer is a guy, a home drafted young guy who is, you know, going to be significantly cheaper than the kind of money that I think Tashaun Gibson's going to want.
Very much so.
From the Browns standpoint, where do you come in on that? You've seen something. You haven't seen it consistently from him yet, and he's about to hit the market. And in his mind, he thinks he's a top five safety in the league, and maybe he's shown flashes of that, but he certainly hasn't shown it on a consistent basis. And as you know, Gerard, that's all you want from someone is consistency.
Right, and yeah, and you hit it right there. Jordan Poyer is messing up Tashaun Gibson's money. That's really what it boils down to in my mind, because Poyer, when he had his opportunities, what did he do? He made the most of them.
He
now,
did,
he didn't go complete, make it a complete Wally Pipps situation, but one of the things that he did do was show that he's capable of giving opportunities to make things happen. But if I were one of the people that was giving advice to Tashaun, I'd tell him this. Ray Horton puts you on the map, right?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there's some affinity for you from him, and
yes.
that guys have guys that they like, and they want to attribute their success to them, and they're connected. Go back there another year. Get back on the right track. You play in a position in which you can play 10-plus years
yep.
and get decent money for it. Show everybody that last year was a fluke because of the bad situation from a coaching standpoint that you may have went through, and that things were obviously on the right track because your team was 3-13, and then start the process all over. The problem is, probably at this point in time, guys, he's saying, you know what, I've been in this league long enough now. Why I still have to go through this rigmarole? But sometimes you do. So I hope he doesn't make a rash decision out of anger and just go somewhere else. Now, similar to me, I left New Orleans because I was just sick of the situation from a individual standpoint. I would have made more money had I stayed there and had more opportunities to be a starter had I stayed there. But I guess I shouldn't complain because ultimately I ended up with 3 Super Bowl rings.
Yes.
That's helped out as well. So who knows what happened for him.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he's going to have – the Browns have made their offer to him. I'm sure he's seen that, and obviously it wasn't in the ballpark of what he wanted. And so what will be interesting for Tashaun is, as you said, coming off of that season, when he does go out to the open market, Now, it only takes one. It only takes one, but what is the value going to be for him?
And the first question is going to be, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened last year?
Yeah, what's going on with your body? What happened
there? Well, I just thought he was in a bad mood all year long, he was insulted by the second-round tender, right?
Yes.
He thought he should have gotten the first-round tender, and, I mean, there are two ways you can go with that. You can go the way, unfortunately, that it went for him, Girardi, or you can use it for such motivation that, you know, you fuel that, and you have a great year, and that didn't happen for him.
Right, and that's really what he needs to do is say, okay, though they did not give me what I wanted, what can I do not to repeat what took place last year? Because, obviously, he does not play well with that type of anger on his shoulders and in his mind. He needs to get back to that place of, hey, I'm the guy that was an undrafted player from Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go out here and make the most of it and not buy into the hype. If he can do that, I'm confident he'll get back on track because I don't like his game a lot. And I think he can be a really good player and return the Pro Bowl form. Everything was so convoluted last year, he got caught up in the mix of it all, and you could see that. So I don't think he's by any means played his best football yet, and I think he'll get better. But, heck, he has to obviously get his mind and his attitude right first and foremost.
That would be one that I really would hope that they could find common ground on because I think, you know, he wants what he wants, and he wants, I think, that respect.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Drew. I think he has an opportunity to say, all right, I can, you know, find that respect by playing, putting in another good year or so here with the Browns. But it's going to be tough because he's going to want security of a multi-year deal. And I'm guessing when things don't get done, either he doesn't want to be here or they're just so far apart on what they think their respective values are.
Well, the unknown, and that's interesting that Girardi brings it up, but he's right. The Ray Horton thing will be interesting. I mean, sometimes you just need the right guy coaching you who kind of was a big part of your career, and this is an unusual situation that guy would come back to the team that you're with.
Yeah.
This is really unusual.
Yeah, it is a very unique situation.
A lot of guys will appreciate that sometimes if you're in the right scheme, and you're in the right situation, and that can help your career. You think about what's taking place. You probably drop Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady in this situation of what's taking place with our quarterback carousel. They're not the same player. The organization plays a part in that, too, and sometimes if it's the type of scheme you're in. Does that fit your bill and how you play football? And obviously, whatever Ray was throwing out there and asking Tashana to do, it made him a better player. Mm. But if I were him, I would think about it from those terms and stick with it. Because, heck, Ray is obviously a guy people respect. He could follow Ray around the league for the next 10 years and have a job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Girardi, appreciate the time, as always, and the good stories. And make sure, you know, if you're out there, if anybody's listening that's running in the combine, make sure the person with you is not snoring.
Or get yourself some earplugs.
There you go, yeah.
Or get your own room, exactly. Girardi, appreciate it, man. Thank you.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, when we come back, we'll go ahead and take a look at some of the Mel Kiper pre-combine conference call sound. We've got the Browns position review six-pack for the defensive line. And at 2:30, Tom Reed from the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com will be with us. Segura and Donovan, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go here on Cleveland Browns Daily.